Welcome to Talk About Talk with Shanti Niven and Desiree Luthi. Shanti and Desiree are professional speakers and trainers of world-class speakers and anyone who wants to improve their oral communication skills and their lives. Listen in as they share their captivating speaker secrets over morning coffee. Tune in weekdays from 7:30 to 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget to follow the show or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Isn't that a lovely sing-song, good morning?
I know. I want to talk in a British accent today.
Well, I hope you can all hear us, because we have
the heater on.
The heater on.
So cold.
It's blocking. I don't understand, Desiree.
Freezing.
She's sitting here in a vest, basically.
Okay, because we have the heater on. Outside, it's freezing.
In a vest and complaining about the cold. I'm sitting here bundled up. Looking like a bear with all these layers of clothing on. It's actually ridiculous. Anyway, for California, this is just a mild, a tad bit chilly. Nothing cold
about
it.
That.
Thinking about the
East
Coast.
It says it's under 50, which is below freezing for me.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Are you being serious? Think about the East Coast as it actually had below zero.
Their choice. We all choose where we live. I choose here for a reason.
Anyway, today we are talking about storytelling and storytelling secrets. And why is storytelling so important? And it's funny because this has really only come up in the last few years, but this is something that I would say has been my brand forever.
Mm.
Because I've always loved stories. I've loved hearing them. I've loved telling them. And sometimes the word story has a negative connotation, because if I say I'm telling a story, it almost sounds
lying.
Yes, you're telling a lie.
It's a lie, yeah.
I was just going to say, or you're telling an exaggeration. But in fact, stories represent and covers anecdotes, the story of your life, the stories, I should say, of your life. Because your life isn't one story. It's a bunch, a collection of stories every day. If I think about it, every single day is a story. I face different challenges. So let's first of all get into what constitutes a story. What are you laughing at?
You make me laugh because I hear a lot of people say that stories are exaggeration, and then I think of Shanti's stories, and they're not exaggeration, they're all 100% the truth, but they're so extreme, because it's just, how can this happen? And it makes me laugh, because they're just amazing stories. They're amazing stories.
No, but until you live with me, if you think about you coming to live with me over at the other place, and then you live the story.
You live the story.
But I think Candace's, my daughter's explanation or comment once about some of the things that I've been through in my life, is she said, Mom, I think these things you went through then because you needed to be either a writer or a speaker. And it's funny that she said that because I've looked at my life sometimes and thought maybe I shouldn't tell my story. I mean, I've told Desiree a lot of my stories. I selectively share my stories with the world because if I had to tell all the things that I've been through, all the things that I've seen, all the things that I've witnessed, there would be people that honestly would worry about my mental health and would think I'm exaggerating, they think I'm lying, because very few people have been through stuff like that. Now, I'm not saying that I haven't told a good story and added some embellishments and exaggerations for good effect and to make people laugh. I'm the first one to admit I do that, but I wouldn't have to exaggerate my stories in order to shock value, let's put it that way. Anyway, the word story really is a way that people pass information along that is different to how, for example, I would just get up and talk about a whole string of facts and information and just rattle that information off, as opposed to telling it in story form and sharing it in story form where it becomes very visual. And then what's the benefit of that is that people retain that. And so history has basically been a collection of stories.
And it's all around us. Look at the news that you watch today. They're called news stories.
Yes.
It's a story for a reason. It's an event happening, something going on, and they're happening all around us. And we, in a way, we learn from stories when we're getting explained certain things, when we're meeting people. It's constant stories all the time. It's a connection point for a lot of us.
Gossip is about stories.
Mm-hmm.
The tabloids, really, now, you see, there are true stories and there are not true stories. The tabloids capitalize very often on hearing a story and blowing it up for the public, who are hungry for stories. But this really does show us that people are hungry for stories. We love stories, and it goes way back to our ancestors who would sit around fires, not necessarily the campfire, and share their stories of the day, their successes. The hunters would share their stories about their hunts and so on and so forth. And mothers would share stories with their daughters about what they went through and so on. And we still do this to an extent today, and that's why even on the internet people share stories. Can you think of anything, for example, anything in particular that has gone viral? That's an unfair one to pass to because she's suddenly going, ooh. Meanwhile,
there, I have hundreds, and I just like, oh, of course, now, right now, my head is wanting to sleep and not. The ones that have been touching me lately that I've been watching are the stories of the army men that are coming home from war, and they see their babies for the first, or they're seeing their kids again, and their kids, they come and surprise them, and these are the stories that make me want to cry every single time. It's that emotional connection and rejoining of their family, and it's so powerful.
But there are so many stories that touch me, and that one of the reasons that I honestly genuinely see sometimes Facebook as a research, a way to research.
Oh, yeah.
Because in our business, we need to know what is it that people are excited about. So I really look out for posts that people really like. And it's always, and people are crazy about animals here in America. It's something I've discovered. You can post anything about animals, and there's some story. There was a horrific story about a woman who ran a pet shop somewhere. And they caught her on camera, torching the pet shop, obviously for insurance, pouring gasoline all around the cages, but she left all the dogs and the little puppies in the cages. And so they caught her doing this, so she's just been sentenced to 13 years in jail. Mm. But they saved the puppies, all of them.
Oh, that's such a good story.
So that was all I cared about, is that I didn't care if she went to jail for her entire life. All I wanted to know is that those puppies were okay.
That's such a good story.
But then they left that till the end of the story, which is now part of what we're going to be talking about, is the techniques of storytelling. Because there are ways to tell stories that are compelling and captivating, and then there are ways to tell a story that's frankly boring. Somebody goes on and on about something.
About, it doesn't matter, it's just they go on and on about it.
I mean, I know that there have been stories that I can give you examples of people talking where I wanted them to shut up.
And when you're in that mode of excitement, we understand, you get past the point, you want to share more information, but there's a certain effective way to tell a story, and that's what, as Shanti said, we're going to go through today, because you need to just get to the point sometimes. Share that part, and then you go on and maybe turn. One story can be several stories, for example.
Here's, I think, the best advice one can give a speaker is Winston Churchill's advice about stand up, speak up, and shut up.
Yep.
And knowing when to shut up is important.
Mm-hmm.
Not talking past the close. Now, the story, the reason I use the word close is it's a technique often referred to in selling, that you close the deal. But when you move into the close and you use a closing statement and you say, would you like that in red or blue, or whatever it is that you're doing, big mistake is to talk past, to overconvince, to oversell. You are, at that point, you need to shut up. Because otherwise, you make yourself look desperate, you start frightening the client off. The same in the story. When you're telling a story, there is a punchline. There is a star moment at the end. The stuff that people will always remember. And that point, when you give that punchline, you need to shut up. Otherwise, you ruin it. Anyway, let's get into some stuff about storytelling. 7 tips for storytelling today. Number one, stories are always about people.
And now, I think we just touched on that a little bit, the connection. We're craving connection all the time.
We say it's about people, but it's people connect with other people. To make sure you focus your story on the real-life characters of your story. People are the audience's guide through the process of the storyline. Now, when I told this to the kids, they said, well, what about... excuse me.
The suspense. What about it?
What about... And they gave me an example of some Disney movie that's only got animals in it. And I said, well, those are characters.
And then animals usually have names.
Well, they're anthropomorphized through Disney. In other words, each animal, whether it be an ant or whatever it may
an
be.
Aunt?
An ant.
An ant.
How do you say
no, that's
an
right.
Real
you
ant?
Said, you said ant. Okay.
Okay, and how do you say aunt?
Wait, how do you say ant, the insect?
Ant.
You do say ant.
And I say aunt. Well, it's not A-U.
And I say aunt. I say aunt for an auntie as well, like an auntie. Like
so
the
how
woman.
Do you tell the difference between an aunt and an aunt?
Because I'm assuming when someone says, oh, you have to meet my aunt, they're not talking about an insect.
Well, how do you know if you connect ants? I want you to meet my aunt.
Ant or ants?
Yeah, maybe you have one aunt.
That's a pet. That'd be so weird.
Okay. And then the kids got the point when I say to them, when I say it's about people, let's just make people about characters.
Characters.
It's about characters. And the story has progressed through use of characters. And so the second point is to let your characters speak for themselves. Don't talk about your characters. People tend to over-describe their characters. I remember my daughter at 6 years of age or 5 years of age when she wrote her first essay at school and had to write about herself, and she wrote, my name is Candace and I am 6 years old and I have blonde hair and blue eyes with black dots in the middle. Now that was very cute coming from a six-year-old.
I have eyelashes and eyebrows.
It was so, I laughed so much when I read this, and the teacher had a jolly good laugh as well. But when you're writing a story, you do not need to give too much information about the characters. And I'll tell you why. They reveal themselves through their actions. For example, one of the greatest books I've ever read, and I'm sure many other people have read, is Gone with the Wind. And people watch the movie, and I always say, you know what, big mistake to watch the movie. The movie sucked compared to the book. The book was brilliant. But in the book, you'll discover they don't tell you too much about really what Scarlett looks like. You develop your own image of what she looks like.
And that's what I think is so powerful, is when they give you what the picture is of the person. For example, The Hunger Games, I read the books first, and then I watched the movies. But immediately after I watched the movies, that was the image I had of her, even though when I read them, it was a different image. And now I've come to the new image that they have.
Yeah.
And now whenever I read the book again, that's who I see automatically. So it's interesting how your brain just tries to connect with something.
Well, the thing with watching a movie, which is why I feel like it's a step down from reading, is that when you watch a movie, they're providing everything for you. So it's we still get captivated, and of course,
we love it.
More captivated by movies because they're providing all of this stuff for you. But radio and reading.
I love creating my own images.
Is the theater of the mind. Mm-hmm. So when people are listening or reading, they're creating their own images in their mind, and that's very powerful. So
but people do it all the time. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I noticed people do it all the time, even with our kids. And I was explaining to them, going through speech writing, the power of image, and I said, imagine a big, fat penguin with a clown nose on. Everyone immediately thinks of a big, fat penguin with a clown nose right away. They see their own image in their head of what that penguin looks like. Probably most of us, it's about the same image, with their beak as a clown nose, perhaps. And that's what they see. And
but some of us may see a big, fat, short penguin. Some must see
a long penguin. It just varies. But that's where the imagination takes us, and it's beautiful that way.
It is, because it allows us to go into our own minds and explore our own thoughts. In fact, this whole debate about this golden, white, or blue and black dress.
Oh, please don't bring that up. I'm sick of hearing about it.
I know. What is with this? But now, hold on. I have to ask you, what did you see? Blue and black?
David and I both saw blue and gold originally. I saw blue and gold.
I saw white and gold. I think I'm very disturbed by this. And bear in mind, I have fixed eyes, so I was blind and I now can see. But
the dress is actually blue and black.
I believe so, but I saw white and gold.
And I saw blue. I saw not dark blue.
Do you know that there's somebody on Adobe Photoshop who took that original image? And what you can do is you can click on a part, and it tells you what the color is with the color code. You know how you can do that? Because it's
amazing.
Well, any paint program can
do that. I didn't know that. Well, I feel like so embarrassed.
You can click on some color.
And it'll just know what color that is?
And it'll tell you what it is. It'll tell you what the color is, what it's called, what its components are, it's whatever number.
That's fascinating. I had no idea.
And the verdict from the Adobe is that the color is gold and white, not black and blue.
And so it has to do with the lighting.
So the image.
The image, yeah.
But let's face it, it's a photograph.
Yeah.
And I think, anyway.
It wasn't dark blue like the original dress. Mine was more of a baby blue sheen and the gold. That's what I thought.
Oh, well, I think if I looked long enough, I could see that there was a bluish tinge to it. Anyway, I guess the point that I'm trying to make with this is that it doesn't matter. Actually,
doesn't matter.
Somebody else posted up an incredible response to that, a meme if you want to call it that, with the gold and white, black and blue, whatever you want to call it, dress, and then next to it was this woman with blood all over her dress wearing the...
Wearing the what, Chachi? Tell me.
Wearing the
sorry.
And she had blood all over her hands, and she's crying, and it really is. We're all so worried about this dress
and what
it means.
Totally.
But there are really people in this world who are going through war and suffering.
If you would have... I believe it was Friday or something, and I saw my news feed on Facebook, and it was just talking about... There was two things that were just... I completely logged out of all Facebook accounts and said, I'm not going on for the rest of the weekend.
I only found out about it.
I'm not going on.
It's after crazy. Everybody had already fussed and died down, because I was going through a little of my own.
I did not notice the original viral part of it. All I saw was the aftermath of everyone saying, what color is the dress?
And David came to me and he said to me, well, what color do you think the dress is? And I said, what are you talking about?
I'm like, David, please do not ask me this. I don't want to hear about this ever again.
I know. I said to him, what dress are you talking about, David? I'm completely confused.
I have to chime in for the listeners that know us. The irony of that is just too good, because Shanti would probably go to David and ask something like that, not the other way around. The fact that he asked you is just too good. The one viral thing he knows about, the news piece, and you're like, what are you talking about, crazy?
But on top of it, think about that question. What, Monty, what color is the dress? I'm thinking, what are you talking about?
What dress?
Where? Why does it matter?
See, and there's another part of the... viral, how things can go viral, and the stories that go viral.
And folks, the reason we're talking about this, there's actually a really good reason for this, because this is part of what we discuss and what we want to know. Getting back to the stories are about people, about characters. Let your characters speak for themselves. In other words, less description. You can give a... There's another brilliant book. Oh dear, now Desiree's coughing like that. The things that happen on radio, speak less about your characters and let your characters speak for themselves. In other words, don't sit there and say he was 6'3" and he had blue eyes with black dots in the middle.
Unless it has to do with your story. If you need to say that, if it has to do with your story, meaning you have to tell them that he has black dots, but all of a sudden the black dots open up, and because he's so tall, he can see to the ocean, or something ridiculous, throwing something off the top of my head. But
the thing is, you don't describe. You normally do it in ways like that, in that because he's tall, you will mention things that, for example, Leon could see above the heads of the rest of the crowd. People envied him his height.
There you go.
You know, that's
so,
sort of thing.
And because, building characters
and
in the beginning
is boring. And you don't need to say he was 6'3". If you describe in such a way that he's head and shoulders taller than everybody else, a person visualizes a giant of a man.
Mm-hmm.
That there was another description of somebody in a book that I've never forgotten as well. She was stern in all angles. Now, I've always remembered that statement.
Well, that's a good one.
She was all angles. So I could see her as being very sharp and point.
Mm.
The book that I love so much is The Book Thief. And in The Book Thief, they talk about this one boy having the colors of, I think I said lemons and sunshine or something like that. I immediately saw a picture in my head. So less is more when it comes to describing. And then rather,
can we just talk about what you just did, though? The way you described his hair was so unique, and it made it that much more powerful. Because it's not he was blonde or he was a towhead. No, it was he had lemon and sunshine hair. That's so powerful.
I know, and I could actually see him in the light.
That's amazing, and I love that.
The other thing is, for example, the book Oliver Twist. Think about the two main characters, Oliver and the Artful Dodger. Now, you could really tell their characters, of Oliver being really innocent in the beginning, and this innocence comes through in the way that he talks, and the Artful Dodger being, you know, he comes across as a little smart aleck, and he's... But meanwhile, you can also see there's a little lost boy inside this. But he's street smart, just by the way he talks. So dialogue is very important.
Mm.
And even in a speech, we need to use dialogue. And I always say to the kids, we always have fun in the classes, as you know, about creating characters.
Oh, yeah.
And in the beginning, we ask them to define their characters and to stay in character. and they speak with one accent or another, or high pitch or a low pitch or whatever it is, and they use big differences. But a seasoned speaker eventually will tamper that down. You don't really want, unless you're really expert, like Tom, at putting on accents, for example, you do not want to be speaking in all the characters, because you start to look a bit crazy, actually.
And it's actually confusing, and I've had my kids try to do it, and then they forgot which character is which accent, and then it just messes the whole thing up.
And so people always ask me in speeches, well, how do you get away with that? And here's a tip for speakers. When you're speaking about two characters, this is a trick that we learn through our improv classes as well. It's a slight change. You do not need to go, and mother said, good morning, everybody. How are you this morning? Father said,
I'm very good this morning. How are you, darling?
I'm fine. And go like that. You hear what I'm saying? You've got all these different accents. Or you've got the mother bear, the baby bear, the father bear, and all this kind of stuff. Because it does become hard to keep those same voices going.
Mm-hmm.
But with a slight shift of your body, the other thing that I want to mention, I'm just jumping off point here, is that people sometimes stand in these characters' positions, which gives them a lot of work to do. So the mother's over here and the father's over there, and they're running
jumping
from one
around.
Spot to the other. Don't do it. Here's how I do characters. I'm standing in one spot. I'm talking to the audience. When I go into character, I lean on my right foot for the one character. I lean on the right foot and I slant my eyes slightly to one side. Bear in mind, audience should always see your face. Then when I slip into the other character, I don't jump around to the other side. I lean over to my left foot and face slightly the other way, and I now become the other character,
mm-hmm.
orienting my body slightly that way. Never once do I turn my back on the audience or my side on the audience.
Mm.
I don't jump from one place and then jump to another place. And there may be a slight shift in my voice. Because if you're trying to do all these characters, then you're doing a one-man play.
Yeah.
In the speaking room. Okay. I'll let you do point number three.
Which we kind of skimmed upon as well, which is audiences can bore very easily.
Low concentration
level.
We all have ADHD.
And that is where you have to bring in connecting. Oh, that's number four. But we'll get into that in a second. But it's really connecting with what you're speaking about. Because they can bore easily, and that's where your words and how you describe things in your story make all the difference to your audience. And if you have too many characters, if you're moving around the stage, it can cause distractions and then people tune out.
Yes.
So becoming aware of how you're presenting the story and really engaging with them.
And then the most important point of number three about audiences bore easily is there's got to be action. If your story is not advancing
right.
along,
yeah.
if there isn't action, if there isn't conflict, if there isn't something happening, if you're getting too stuck, I remember reading these incredible books that started off with Planet of the Cave Bear. This was a book that was thicker than the Bible. It was this thick, and there was three or four of them. Once you got into these books, they were absolutely by Jean M. Auel. One day I'll get you into it when we are relaxing on some island in Fiji. I was captivated by this book, but I skipped large tracts of passages in the first book because she got so into describing the vegetation and the herbs and the plants and everything. She was very drawn to that stuff, and it's very much part of the story because the main character is like a medicine woman who makes all these concoctions. But she got far too wrapped up in that information. And then there was also a lot of sex scenes.
Well, I think there's also what you're describing there. There's a difference between storytelling for writing and storytelling for speaking.
Well, there is and there isn't. I'm going to give you an example of what I'm saying now with her book. I found myself in a book skipping large tracks because it was, oh, my goodness, she's going to get into describing this. And I'd skip forward to the next action scene. You can't do that in a speech. So if somebody chooses to sit there and waffle on about the vegetation, you are going to tune out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tune out, you've lost the audience. When you say the next good thing, they're gone.
Yeah.
They are gone. So in a story that is spoken to people, you need to keep it moving on. You need to say less. And you need to advance the story through action, through conflicts, through twists and turns, through suspense, rising suspense. That's one of the things as well. Build, just as in everything in life, it starts up at one point, builds up to a climax. You can have two or three climaxes within a story with one big climax.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yes. But you've got to rise to a point, and and then come down again. So that's very important through the story. A great example that I want to mention at this point is my friend Jojo, who will be starting our story circle very soon. We're starting Captivating Storytelling Circle. We will be teaching people the art of storytelling, sharing our stories. And I think I'm really excited about this. We're going to be doing this very soon. Jojo is a master storyteller. And one of the things that she says, which is such a fantastic visual, she talks about that game, and now I've gone blank on the game. You know the one that you stack everything up, what's it called? The
Jenga?
Jenga. And she said, if you think about Jenga, this is now storytelling. So you put all the little blocks and pieces in. But Jenga is removing everything that you need to while still keeping the structure intact. And that is the perfect example. It's what I've been saying for such a long time. What I do with all the guys who come to me with their speeches is the first thing I do is strip.
Remove it.
I strip all the rubbish. And, you know, Desiree in the beginning of the show was talking about Shanti's stories being unbelievable. But honestly, I don't sit and tell a lot of the details. I really don't. I don't need to.
Because we create it in our mind,
You absolutely do. And if I talk about a story, a true story that happened in South Africa when we were in an armed robbery and I explain the event, I go into the emotion of the moment. I talk about the time that, for example, my son and myself were on the floor, him with his feet up against the door, me behind him, how the emotions that I felt at the moment, the screaming in my mind as I thought about my daughter just feet away, that I was helpless to help her, that these guys with guns were there and what they could be doing with her. So I was talking more about the emotion than I was about 22 feet away was this room and it was angled this way and it did this.
Irrelevant.
It's all irrelevant. So keep the movie of the mind. Because that's what a story is.
But I think what you just touched upon, which is our next point, is going into the emotions. And that's what people connect to, is the emotions, how you felt in that moment, you know, the thoughts running through your mind and how you weren't able to help your daughter and you have your son there and the intensity of your voice at the same time. The tone of your voice is just as powerful when you're sharing these stories. And even if you're writing, the tone of your writing also describes so much more, and everyone there, all of a sudden they connect to that intensity, because in our brain, as humans, we want to connect with each other. Whether I went through that similar experience or not doesn't matter. The thought of me going through it is what causes me to feel that emotion and connect with you as a speaker. And then I start feeling empathy. You know, I connect with you. And actually, I believe there was a study that just came out that said children that read more stories become more empathetic towards others.
They do either read more. Now, you didn't read a lot, but you told a lot.
But I told a lot, and I also loved sharing stories as well.
So that's still, you know, and you watch movies.
And I watched a lot of movies,
And I would say Desiree's watched 20 times more movies than I ever
and
had.
The same movies over and over again, which now I find stupid to do, but I just love my movies.
Well, I did that when I was a kid. I'd watch a movie, Star Trek or something like that.
Star Trek, come on.
Star Trek, Star Wars.
I was going to say Star Trek, and then he died. Rest in peace, Bob.
Yes. Okay. Okay, the other thing, so we said stirring up emotions. Now, here's how you stir up emotions. We're going to get into a little bit more detail next week about how you stir up emotions using your voice, body language, how you draw out the moment, all of that kind of stuff. But what we need is we need to be in the moment. Now, when I'm telling a story, I often go back to that time. I'm reliving it again. Now, I don't relive it with the same emotion, because obviously some of the stories that I tell or have told, and if you think about it, Des, the really traumatic things in my life, do I really speak about it a lot?
No.
Because I don't think I could emotionally handle it. I'm not as emotionally, but I do have to go back to that place, be present, be there. And then the other thing is take your audience there. So one thing that became apparent to me is that having gone through what I did in South Africa, is that very few people had any frame of reference here in the United States.
Mm.
They, you know, even you to this day said to me, I can't relate to this or whatever it is.
Well, it doesn't mean I can't imagine think about what would what I would go through if it were to happen.
That's what the point that I'm going to make, is that you need to help people ease them into an imagining scenario.
Yeah.
So you may use words like imagine if you were in this situation. Here you are, sitting in your living room, watching television. I'm not saying this is one of my stories, but watching television, and suddenly there is a loud explosion. Glass shatters. And you take them straight into the action of the story. Put them into the action. Now, I think we're going to be talking about seven secrets, and we've gone through three and touched on number four, which is what we're going to start off with next week. Is we're going to go back into the emotion, because emotion, folks, is where it's at. And we'll talk a little bit more about that and why a memorable story touches the emotions. It doesn't go to the head. It goes to the heart.
Mm.
Yeah, I can't believe the time's up already.
Time's up already. I know.
Time is up already. We hope that you found some value from our show this morning. And remember that we run our Club Captivate meetings on the first and the third Tuesday of every month, the Hilton in Woodland Hills. But you can go onto our website, www.shantinivin.com. Check out Club Captivate. And
I just want to say, for a challenge for this week, I want everyone to start observing people's stories. Whenever someone's telling you something about their week, perhaps, what they did over the weekend, how are they sharing it? What is it that you liked? What is it that you didn't like? How could they have made it a little bit different? And think about how that story makes you feel. Whether it's good, bad, ugly, doesn't matter. Think about and dissect. Do it as a little bit of research this week and just kind of see what you're feeling about stories. And similar, what stories are you sharing with people and how is it making them feel? How do you want them to feel about your story? So start thinking about that for this week as a little challenge and homework.
One last thing I wanted to just share is that just came into my mind a particular salesman that I remember that used to always come to visit, but he always had stories to tell. And quite honestly, he was annoying. Because I would be busy and I would have things to do and he'd always have some story to tell. And so I wanted to say to you that if the word stories in the business context makes you feel immediately has a negative connotation, because I'm sure some of you out there are listening and thinking, oh, I'm busy, I've got things to do, I don't really have time to hear somebody's stories. We're going to share a little bit more next week and in the following weeks about how stories can be used in the business realm to be extremely effective. In fact, it's one of the most effective ways to sell a product.
Yep.
And we're not talking about time-wasted stories where somebody's waffling on about the fish that they caught over the weekend. No. We're speaking about a directed story with a point, with a purpose. Okay, folks, thank you so much. And remember that you can always get in touch with us via, as they say here in America, our website or on Facebook. And our Facebook tweets, I don't use Twitter, but my Facebook tweets. But anyway, follow us, go to Club Captivate on Facebook or check us out on the website. Thank you so much for joining us today. Enjoy the weather.
And with that, as always, stay
captivating.